We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt, joining me as always over there. Still way, way over there in beautiful, sunny Southern California, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how you doing?
I'm good. If I could stay out here via tying my ankle to a giant boulder in these mountains, I would. It's fantastic out here, and I'm very grateful to be getting this much sunshine when I know it's not going to last forever, Ty.
No. By the way, I meant to ask, what's your mask situation? Have you been expressing yourself via your face mask or anything crazy like that?
No, I have a black mask that I will wear when I go out to be around people outside if I'm, you know, picking up food or something like that. A family friend has actually sewn a bunch of cloth together, and we have a bunch of new masks, which is nice. So there's going to be a little bit more in the way of color and patterns soon. But right now, it's just been literally dark.
The man
in black.
It's been
a dark black mask. Yeah, I look like some sort of old-timey robber or something.
I've seen a couple of them created that look like whatever mask Bane was wearing in Batman.
That's amazing.
Those are pretty damn cool. If you could actually get that mask from Bane, that would be even cooler, but I haven't seen that yet. Maybe I need to go and check Etsy.
Do you want to do this entire episode
in Bane voice?
I'm Bane!
That was not Bane. Ty, I'm going to be very clear.
Yeah.
There was like a sort of a Muppety quality to your Bane, and I love it. And I'm going to, Ryan, isolate that.
Welcome I'm just going to keep back.
Telling Ryan to isolate the amazing Ty sounds.
To the show, I am Ty. He is Dan. Impressions are not my forte. College football, though. College
no,
football
Yoda Bane is.
Is
very scary. Yoda Bane is terrifying.
Look, we just started. We can't derail this thing yet, all right?
Okay, sorry. We're back.
Welcome back to the show. Solidverbal at gmail.com. Write in, let us know what you think about Yoda Bane.
Yoda Bane.
Follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, and also along on the subreddit at solidverbal.reddit.com if you want to pick up the conversation wherever we leave it. We've been doing news hits at the top of every show, trying to keep people up to speed with the latest happenings in the world of college football. A lot going on, not on the field, but off the field, trying to figure out what may happen when we get to the field. This whole show today is essentially one big news hit because there was an article co-authored by our good friends over at The Athletic, Nicole Auerbach and Bruce Feldman, titled Ivy League's Impending Decision could be a, quote, big domino for college football. Yeah, the Ivy League, by the time a lot of folks listen to this show, may be out with some news about how they're going to handle their college football season this fall. There's some speculation that they may move it to the springtime, something we've been trying to talk about now for the last few weeks.
Right.
And yeah, there is some speculation that could have a domino effect on other big conferences, on other big programs. And so Nicole's going to stop by momentarily to talk through her perspective on the matter and what she thinks it means moving forward. Just a lot to unpack here from the standpoint of just being a college football fan, right, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, precedent matters. So we saw it in basketball when some conferences canceled their conference tournaments, and that led to others seriously reconsidering and eventually canceling conference tournaments and eventually March Madness. And I think it's going to eventually matter, perhaps only up to a certain point, but it could be as it relates to FCS schools. We saw Fordham push back their schedule. They were going to travel to Hawaii. Obviously, it seems like a prohibitively long flight, given some of the risks we now know about going from New York to the islands. So what, I don't even know what that is, 10, 11 hours with driving as well. And they're pushing their season back to late September. I get it. I get the fact that even though it's the Ivy League and these are not schools dependent on TV income in the same way Power Five conferences are, that they're all looking at the same thing. They're all looking at the feasibility of various protocols and various outcomes. And if, in fact, the Ivy League leads the way, it wouldn't surprise me. And, you know, we've seen conversations all about playing a more localized schedule, and maybe we'll do a show about that this week. I think that's what our plan
is,
a more localized schedule. And the Ivy League, luckily, I mean, this is not a largely spread out conference. I think most of the conference is within somewhat of a day's drive. If you look, Rhode Island and Massachusetts and New York. So I imagine that it is going to have a domino effect. Whatever they choose to do will influence perhaps an FCS league slightly larger than it, and so forth and so forth. So I think it's perfectly reasonable to look at the Ivies and say, they've imagined this, and they're attacking this strictly from a health perspective, not necessarily a health and financial perspective. And I think that's going to carry a good amount of water, Ty. And I know, as somebody who turned down a number of Ivies, yeah, you probably have thoughts as well.
Yeah. Well, as Bruce and Nicole put it in the piece, there's maybe a bit of a trickle-up effect here.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
You know, that trickle-up effect. And I think a lot of folks in powerful positions around major college football look at the Ivy League and respect the amount of research and thought that's going to go into this decision. So there is something certainly to being the first mover and establishing kind of a precedent that other schools can perhaps lean upon if right, they don't want to be the first out the door. So a lot remains to be seen in this regard. I know, you know, if we could peel back the curtain a little bit, you and I we struggle with this. We struggle with,
yeah,
we want to be football fans. We want there to be football. But at the same time, it does sort of feel silly that we're trying to rationalize how this is going to go down, when I think we all know at the end of the day, it's a really tough spot to be in. It's really tough to kind of envision, especially given the way things are going right now, how on God's green earth they're going to pull this thing off. I hope they can do it safely. I hope they can do it in a manner that prevents a whole bunch of kids from getting sick. But I must admit that, as someone who's normally an optimistic person, this wave of pessimism has washed me over as well. It's I think we're going to start hearing creative solutions here, more creative solutions than we've heard over the last few weeks and months, just because the situation is going to warrant it, frankly.
Yeah. And time is the friend of safety, right? And there's just, the timeline is so rushed now, it feels like, because you get into late July, early August, big decisions need to be made. And
oh yeah,
we're not in a late July, early August world.
It's getting late early.
Yeah. So no, there's still so much to unpack, and so much we don't even know that needs unpacking. So I'm curious. I'm hopeful. I want there to be football, but I want there to be football correctly, if that makes sense.
Football correctly. I think that's the right way to phrase it. Yeah. Again, we welcome everyone's feedback on this.
Sure.
solidverbal@gmail.com. We do read all the messages. You can go out to the website, click contact, and fill out the form. Would love to get your feedback on this. Interesting times to say the absolute very least. If you haven't gone out to the website lately, we would encourage you to go out there and sign up for our newsletter. I know we've been teasing it now for quite some time. We did send one out a few weeks ago. We would encourage you to go out and sign up for that newsletter if you haven't already. We're going to be trying to send that out a little bit more to stay in touch with you, our beloved Verballers. The other thing that I would add is if you haven't subscribed to the show yet, please do so on Spotify, on Apple, on Google, anywhere you get a podcast, you can find our show. All that stuff helps, as do the five-star reviews. The five-star reviews are a big deal, especially right now in this time of uncertainty. We've got every plan in the world to continue recording. We're not going to stop. We want to keep going. We want to keep pushing forward, the pedal to the metal, yada, yada, yada.
The more good news we are able to learn about, the more we'll record. Right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. So you can do all those little things to help us out as we plow ahead here, again, under the assumption that there will be a season, an attempt at a season.
Yep.
We just don't know what that is going to look like, Dan.
Correct.
So with that being said, and without further ado, very pleased to welcome back to the show our good friend, senior writer from The Athletic, host of the Coach's Clubhouse pod from SiriusXM, Nicole Auerbach. How are you?
Hey, I am, I don't know, I feel like the same as always. I know we're allowed to do like a little bit more, you know, go to like occasional outside restaurants and stuff, but still kind of feels like Groundhog Day all over again. Every day, just wake up, look out the window.
I was going to ask, that was my next question. What have you done in terms of leisure just to keep the mind sharp?
Well, I visited family, the Jersey Shore. That was great. It was great to get outside the same 4-block radius that I've been in Chicago the whole time. I have gone out to outdoor dining establishments. There is nothing more luxurious than someone delivering a cocktail to you and cleaning up after you. I will never take that for granted again. I'm not sure when your audience is listening to this, but Tuesday evening, I am dining with the great Adam Amin, friend of the pod. So very excited. Haven't seen him in 4 months. So that'll be fun.
All right. Well, you've been doing some fine work out on The Athletic, working the beat, the COVID-19 beat. I don't know if that's what we want to call it, but that's why we've got you here today. So let's start here. Like, what's your level of optimism that we're going to see a season this fall? And how does your level of optimism compare to maybe what you're hearing when you go out and talk to the powers that be?
It's very interesting because it has changed very drastically in the last 2 weeks. Two and a half weeks ago, I was talking to people about week zero games and their prep for them. And everyone was so optimistic about starting the season on time, playing it basically as scheduled, maybe having disruptions down the road. But questions were about, you know, what capacity can you have? How many people in the stands? And I haven't had anyone bring that up in 2 weeks, right? Because the question is, can you play these games? Are you going to have to shut down fall camp? What's going to happen when students show back up on campuses and you've already got so many, you know, places and college football hotbeds that are in the midst of huge outbreaks in the South, right? So it's definitely changed a lot in the last 2 weeks. There is definitely a lot more pessimism out there. You have some people who are just pessimistic about it starting on time, right? And they're saying, well, you could play just conference games. Maybe you push it back a few weeks, whatever that looks like, right? But you also have people saying, you know, there's going to be some dominoes here. You already have Division II, Division III schools canceling fall sports. You've had some FCS and FBS games get canceled already based on the Patriot League. You know, the Ivy League expected to push their fall sports to spring. What does that mean for other leagues in FCS? And then if other leagues in FCS decide to push the season to spring or cancel things, what does that mean for FBS? What does that mean for Group of Five? Does that pressure build and get to the point where the Power Five is thinking about this as well? And not just, you know, oh, should we just play conference games or push back a week, whatever. All those like adjustments that still make it possible to play in the fall time period. So there are a lot of different people of a lot of different perspectives on this. But the fact that there have been these huge, huge outbreaks in Arizona, California, Texas, and Florida, and the Carolinas have really, really created a lot of pessimism with the people who are going to be making these decisions at different conferences about, you know, when and if you can play.
So let me back up a second. You mentioned the Ivy League, and in a piece published, I guess, yesterday, you and Bruce Feldman, another friend of the podcast, outline how the Ivy League announcement, which I think you said is expected on Wednesday, how that's a really big moment that could have a domino effect. Can you walk us through, maybe not everyone out there has read the article, but what the thinking is on that front, why it could be that big moment?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing to keep in mind here, even though these are different sports and we're in a totally different environment, is that the Ivy League went first in basketball too. They canceled their conference tournament before anyone else did. And at the point where people thought it was a major overreaction and that it was ridiculous, like people were mocking the Ivy League's decision at that point. And 2 days later, everything was shut down, including the NCAA tournament, right? So there is an element here of this is a league that was not afraid to go first and prioritize public health and safety. And they were right. They were right to do what they did back in March. Now, this is different. And certainly, you know, when you talk about a Power Five conference or like an SEC deciding to punt on fall college football, that is a huge, huge, huge decision. But so was canceling March Madness, right? So, you know, I mean, there has been very hard decisions made in college athletics over the last 4 months. Certainly the one to cancel March Madness for the first time. So it would require, you know, that type of decision to be made, even if you're going to just try to push back college football, right? These are huge, huge decisions with so much at stake financially with these media rights deals and on all of these things that come into play. But I think so you have that. So you have the background here that the Ivy League went first and was proven to be correct and making the right decision back in March. And then also just the way that college sports are structured and college football. So you don't have the NCAA controlling the postseason like you do in a lot of other sports like March Madness. So you have the college football playoff in charge of that. Who's involved in that? It's power conferences. There's some representatives in the other FBS leagues. But basically, without a centralized governing body, without a commissioner, without, you know, these entities that exist in pro sports, these decisions are going to get made on an individual school campus basis and also conferences. So that's what ultimately happened before the March Madness was canceled, was a bunch of conferences canceled their tournaments, kind of like dominoes, right? So the way that would have to work in college football is similarly, and we're seeing the cancellations and things happen at Division II, Division III, some of the FCS schools already, HBCUs. The thinking here is if the Ivy League goes and says, we are moving all of our fall sports to the spring, that would provide some sort of cover for other FCS conferences that might want to make the same decision or university presidents that might want to make the same decision. But there's so much riding on this and they don't want to be first. So the idea there is there's ripple effects, right? So it's not necessarily saying, okay, the Ivy League's going to do this. And so that means like Alabama and Auburn are suddenly going to want to cancel football, right? Like that's not what the story outlines. It's just about the context of the college environment, how, you know, there becomes pressure, there become decisions that are easier to make when you're not first. And so that's why it's so important to keep an eye on, because it could cause other FCS leagues to make unilateral decisions, which could then put up pressure on Group of Five and eventually the Power Five, right? Like if you have all of FCS shut down, and there's pressure and, you know, maybe the MAC and CUSA and Mountain West are thinking about pushing the season back. You know, I mean, how hard a sell is that going to be if you're the SEC saying we're going to play through it? It's not safe enough for anyone else, but we're going to try, right? So that's where, you know, you have the domino effect. You have pressure building on people who haven't yet made a decision. So that's why it's important to pay attention to what the Ivy League does, the Patriot League, some of these other FCS leagues, even though their makeup, their finances, all of that stuff is very, very different than the SEC. It's all intertwined, and the ripple effect thing is a real thing. So it's just these are all kind of benchmarks and important pieces to the puzzle. And so that's why it's important to keep these decisions in mind, especially with this time frame where we know that the Power Five is going to have to make final decisions about fall football by early August at the latest.
Are there any conferences, because obviously you've mentioned the fact that this is on a conference level, on a school level, and a comfort level, and everybody's sort of working with different data points and different sort of internal regulations. Are there any Power Five conferences, to your knowledge, in which schools are especially aligned with regard to protocol and how specific data points will inform action across that conference? Is there anybody that's especially, I suppose, universal?
Well, I do think there's a lot of conversations and cohesion in these leagues, right? Like these are people who have been meeting daily, or if not daily, close to daily for 4 months in terms of athletic directors. There's been calls with presidents, right? These people are meeting more frequently than they ever have. And, you know, obviously you also have those calls between the Power Five commissioners, which are almost daily as well. So there is some cohesion. There's definitely a level of cohesion and camaraderie that exists now that didn't exist right in that lead up to that basketball tournament cancellations, right? That came very fast for a lot of people. So what I think is interesting is with COVID testing, safety protocols, things like that, that's also not national. Those are going to be conference decisions. So that's where you have a level of comfort in like this idea of, well, what if you just play conference games? Because you know everyone will do the same amount of testing. Again, it's this cohesion, right? Like, you know what's happening on all these other campuses. You know, like, let's look at the Big Ten, for example, right? You have a lot of, you know, when you've brought people back and returned to voluntary testing, you don't have a lot of positives. You have a lot of people in states that are not in outbreaks right now that learned from earlier outbreaks, right? So, you know, it's definitely different based on where you are in the country, and it's different based on what states are included in your league. But there is that communication and cohesion. So I think if you're going to make decisions, again, big ones like potentially getting rid of non-conference games or pushing back the season, you know, I do think I'm sure these decisions are not going to be unanimous within each league. But I do think, you know, there has been so much constant communication and so much information sharing, best practices, how you're doing your testing, frequency, all of that stuff, that I do think that there is a level of that you might not have, especially when you talk about like the Big Ten versus the SEC and just where the outbreaks are right now, the protocols, the ability, you know, you have places like, you know, Clemson, where you have X amount of positive tests, but you didn't shut down, right? And then you have, you know, what is that threshold where you shut down at Boise State, right? Things are different. So to answer your question, I don't know exactly like which leagues are the most unified, but I do know that, you know, you definitely have leaders in certain leagues in certain parts of the country that are looking at this certainly differently in terms of their own experiences. Think about, you know, our own experiences with COVID and, you know, how seriously we've taken it at different points in the last 4 months, right? Like, it's informed by if you know people who were sick, what your state did to shut down, what your state did to reopen. It's kind of like that in college football too, in terms of, you know, who's been wearing masks the whole time, who's been prioritizing certain things they've been getting from their health and safety officials, right? And then who have been saying, you know, well, we've been in the South and, you know, we didn't get hit like New York City did, so things are totally fine. And then the outbreaks come now, right? So that affects the way that you're thinking and the way that you're handling this. So it's very interesting, and it very much mirrors kind of the way the nation has handled this, where it's very, very different depending on your own personal experience with it.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This sounds like an odd question, but because we're going to see reports of this, and we've already seen reports of it, that's campuses closing, students are going to online or online learning only, and yet there's still a football conversation involved in those specific campuses. How are people in charge justifying those conversations? How, you know, what conversations are had about the optics? What is an excuse? What is a positioning of saying we don't have students near each other, but football seems cool? What is the justification?
All right. Let's go through those, okay? Because there's definitely some talking points. The first is that if you don't have the entire general student population, it's actually safer, right?
Right.
It's a smaller group of people. You could say this is an easier case to make if you were talking about like a basketball team versus football, but you could still say with football that they are mostly in a controlled environment, right? Like, I think you could say that, like, you know, the precautions and everything that's being taken around football practices and the weight room makes it as safe as possible. It's probably maybe safer than being in a dorm room, being in the cafeteria, right? And being exposed to more people and surfaces and things. So you could say those things, right? That smaller population, yes, they're kind of guinea pigs, but also it's better than, you know, adding frats back to the mix and all of those things, which we know frats are going to be just like literal petri dishes for this. We all know the money that's at stake, right? So
it's this
feeling that, you know, if we can have football happen, it will continue to provide opportunities in terms of scholarship for female and male athletes in other sports. So that sort of, you know, we need to do whatever we can possibly do to make these games happen. Or, you know, again, here's another optics issue. If it's not safe enough to have fans there, how is it safe enough to play? The flip side of that has always been, well, it's less people. You know, again, you have health and safety measures. You know, I did a story this week about like helmet shields, you know, face shields added to helmets, right? But again, that's a hard optics to look for. And I've really said all along that the key is if you're going to have regular students on campus, which again, I understand why that makes it way more likely to spread a virus that's very contagious. But it's hard to be like, these football players who we have literally argued in court are just like regular students, right? They're not employees. They shouldn't get paid. They are just like college students, student athlete first, right? Student first. It's hard to justify that if they're the only ones on campus. So it's definitely an optics issue and just like kind of like a moral issue, right? If you're talking about amateur athletes doing this instead of professional athletes who have a union and have more control over the environment that they're walking into in these bubbles and things. So I guess I was trying to come up with the ways that they're justifying it, but I really think it's just that it's a safer environment because it's smaller. And they can control certain elements of it. And maybe, you know, they would be able to take some classes or do some things. And maybe, you know, if they were at home this whole time, maybe they were exposed to things, not able to get tested. Maybe they don't have, you know, great Wi-Fi or access to, you know, nutrition and things that they know they can get on a college campus. Right. So I think those are kind of the talking points. And again, they're really hard to defend when you look at it from an optic standpoint, and then also just, again, the way that they've tried to defend the collegiate model, which is a problem.
Are they wrestling with this? Are, like, behind the scenes and, you know, from what you are able to hear off the record, are they struggling to actually mount this optic defense?
Well, I don't know if they think about it that way, but I think, like, they think about these are amateur athletes. And, you know, we've heard a lot of administrators try to make it very clear that, like, you know, your scholarship won't get taken away if you don't come back, if you don't feel comfortable to come back. But we know the power dynamic there, right? Like, you can still say that and still feel, if you're a player, that you need to go back. And I think that it's all kind of built into the same thing. It's we don't know what the long-term damage of this virus is. We know that there can be some with respiratory issues and lung issues, even for those who are asymptomatic and healthy. Even if, let's say, you're 18 to 22 and in your peak physical form, you know, there could still be long-lasting health issues. So there's definitely people who are uncomfortable about that. And again, that's why we're even having these conversations about, you know, could the Ivy League be a domino, right? Because there's people in all of the different levels who, you know, are uncomfortable about the idea of having a fall college football season, right? So Absolutely. Those are considerations. And I think that people who have spoken about things have been very careful, right? Because, you know, you can't say the things that Mike Gundy said out loud, where you say, whatever, they're not going to die from this. Let's just bring them back. We need it for the economy. You can't say that. You have to be a lot more nuanced than that. And again, I think you have seen people talk about the opportunities that it provides when you have a college football season and how it props up the athletic department and people's livelihoods and opportunities and scholarships for other athletes. We've seen those talking points out there, and they have to stick to them. But yeah, absolutely. Behind the scenes, there are people who are talking about this the way that we're talking about it right now.
Back, I guess, to some of the scenario planning that we've alluded to. Do you think it's more likely that we have some version of an incomplete fall season, maybe with not all teams playing, not all the games being played? Or do you think that the move to spring is something that at this point is more likely?
It's hard to say. I mean, these things kind of change on a daily basis and weekly basis. Again, I think the hard deadline is early August for an on-time season. So I think that you can, you could certainly see a league make a decision to go to just conference games this week, right? And that could still change by early August. But maybe you have people looking at ideas of pushing seasons back 1 month and maybe, you know, looking at how these cases are going to go in these outbreak areas. And then, you know, I don't know, is there going to be a bump from the 4th of July weekend? Is there, you know, are some of these schools going to be reworking how many students they're letting back on campus? Like, maybe if you can do 1 month, or if you say just conference games and you push it back a little, maybe that gives you that time you need to make that decision. But the last resort is the spring season. And I do think we're at the point where the last resort is a conversation topic. I know some people are like dismissing it as, oh, it's the last resort. Well, we're here. We're at the last resort. Have you seen the graphs of these positive tests everywhere, right? So, I do think, you know, you could skip some of those phases of restructuring the regular season and cutting the amount of games and who you play, make it more regional, whatever it is. But you could just go straight to the spring. It's unclear. And I think that in those conversations, even the people who are proponents of moving to the spring and just kind of giving more time for a vaccine, more time for better treatments to come about, whatever it might be. I do think, those people probably change their opinions on how exactly, you know, the steps to get there. Do you just rip off the Band-Aid and just go straight to that? Or do you try these other measures to buy yourself a little time this fall? I don't know. So I think, you know, people will have to look at TV contracts and all of these other pieces to that too, before they officially, you know, decide nothing in the fall is going to work. Then you got to think about, you know, then the length of the season, the amount of the off season, if you're going to have two seasons in one calendar year, the guys who are going to go declare for the draft and prepare, not play, you know, all of those pieces too, which again are logistics and contingencies and all these issues that people would have to work out if we get to that point. But again, those are some of the things too, where it makes spring such a last resort that you're going to try to potentially delay things or make things work in the fall, even if it's not ideal, to not have to get there. So, long answer to your question, which is, I don't know what is more likely or what is more possible, because I also think you could go to conference only games and then eventually, you know, push it back again. Right. So there's ways to go about this and to make these decisions. But if, you know, if someone's going to say we're not going to start on time week zero, week one, they have to really decide that, like, I mean, ideally in the next 2-3 weeks, like at the latest, there is some flexibility where if you go into August and fall camp starts or whatever, you could maybe have that. But I don't think that is a, I think that the way that these decisions are going to come down, potentially starting with the Ivy League, that it might speed up the timeline on some of this too.
Yeah, I was trying to think back as you were talking when the idea of a spring season first registered with me. And I honestly think, Dan, it was when I sent you the link to Chris Fowler's Instagram story weeks ago, where he had kind of offered that as a solution or a just an idea that people were kicking around. And I know in the aftermath of that, there were articles, a couple that were written, and they did seem to be met with a fair amount of resistance. Now, obviously, there are a ton of logistical nightmares that would come with moving an entire season from fall to spring. From a fan's perspective, from the perspective of what Dan and I do and what you do, Nicole, there would obviously be unprecedented interest in something that's basically never happened before. It does seem, at least based on what we've read lately, that the spring season is picking up a little bit more steam. So I don't know if that makes it more likely, but it is tangible. And if you follow the sport with any regularity, I think it's something that you can feel.
What's funny is I feel like there was a phase in March, right, where people were like, what if they have to push to the spring? And then it was like, all systems go. Here we have dates to bring players back on campus. You know, everyone's targeting week zero, week one. There was even phase like, should you move the games up, right? Because people were saying, you know, the winter is going to be rough. Like if colleges are going to close for Thanksgiving, et cetera, et cetera. And then that totally shifted, right? So there have been ebbs and flows in this. And, you know, I think that that's been an important piece of this as people have tried to work through these contingency plans and seen what's available. And then again, like in the last 2 weeks, you know, as the outbreaks intensified, I can't speak, in certain parts of the country that are college football hotbeds, and you had a number of programs that had to suspend voluntary workouts. Like those two things happen at the same time. They're obviously connected, but they happen at the same time. They happen at a lot of different campuses. You've already had some of them happen with college basketball programs that are back on campuses as well. And it all just leads to this wave of pessimism. And Larry Scott from the Pac-12 talked about that a couple times in the last week. And it's basically saying, like, this is a microcosm of society and it's not going well. Because, you know, it's saying the states that we opened stuff up too soon then had outbreaks. And you're saying, like, let's basically do that, but on a college campus. Like, it's the opposite of a bubble. In my mind, like you're talking about, you know, the NBA bubble and everything being regulated, a college campus, you can't do that. And again, you're going to be at risk going to classes, being in the cafeteria. This idea that like people wouldn't hang out or invite other people into their dorm rooms, like it's just, it's not realistic to ask college students to do that. And I think that, you know, you're just envisioning adding more and more regular college students into this environment with the athletes who are already testing positive, and then everyone who's interacted with them has to quarantine, right? So it's shutting things down. It's, you know, trainers have to quarantine, teammates do. And then you're going to add a general student population. So that's where the pessimism has started from and really just kind of grown. So, you know, I mean, I think 2 weeks ago, the conversations were very, very different.
Even though we are talking about young men, the reality is that a lot of coaches, administrators, trainers are talking to parents and family members of these players and getting input, even if it's just about football stuff. It's how dare you switch his position? How dare you cut his playing time? I'm sure there's dialogue happening now about public health issues. What do you know about conversations between coaches and family members of players with regard to plans for the health of their children?
Well, this is an interesting question because I thought there would be potentially more issues in those areas. Like I thought that it was a very realistic possibility that people wouldn't come back, like in droves, or like parents wouldn't let people come back. Like I know there's a lot of college football players that want to play. Obviously, but I didn't think all of their parents would let them do that necessarily. Like you feel invincible when you're 18, 19 and you're, again, super healthy and, you know, great physical shape. But really the only, like we've had some parents come out and say things. You've had some players come out and say things, you know, especially as like the state has outbreaks or they've, you know, adjusted, you know, how many students they're going to allow back and how many classes are going to be online only. You've had a couple of players point out like, well, then why am I here? The only real push or kind of like concerted effort has really been UCLA and the strength in numbers. And that's the players asking for like a third party to like ensure the health and safety guidelines. I thought something like that might happen in more places. I really did. And even despite the power dynamics that are at play in college sports, you know, again, from parents, whoever it might be. So I think that there was a lot of frustration leading into voluntary workouts about, you know, what is the communication? What measures are actually going to be taken? And, you know, I you haven't heard as much grumblings about that, but, you know, I don't know. Again, there's a lot of guys who want to play. There's people of different, you know, beliefs about the severity of this virus too. So like, that's certainly part of it, but I do think, you know, communication with their coaches, with their, you know, administrators on different campuses about like exactly how this works was something that was lacking in a lot of places on the front end of this, and maybe that got better.
We've heard about coaches like James Franklin and Dave Clawson isolating themselves from family for health purposes because they have immunocompromised family members. How widespread would you guess, or do you know to whatever extent, is coaching apprehension? A group of people that are older and that answer to a number of people about exposing themselves to risk.
We'll see. I think that's one of the underrated storylines, honestly, going into all of this. And I know it's come up a little bit in some of the other sports restarts. But yeah, there are a lot of coaches that are in, you know, age ranges that put them more at risk. There's players who you know, have pre-existing conditions that could be at risk. And I think that one thing, you know, when you talk to folks about, like, we did a story on these helmet shields, right? And I spoke to the NCAA's chief medical officer, Dr. Brian Hainline, and one of the things he brought up was, you know, everyone on the sidelines is going to have to wear a face shield or a mask. And the idea is, too, that part of the reason to have a face shield in your helmet is because when that player comes off the field and gets within 6 feet of his coach, who is over the age of 60, he needs to protect, you know, himself. And, like, both sides need to protect themselves, right? So that that player who could be infectious is not infecting the coach. So that's a concern, and I've talked to different commissioners about that as well, is about protecting those coaches. You know, and you've obviously got people who are going to go interact with their families and family members and other people, teachers and other people in the community that are in those at-risk groups too. But I think, you know, absolutely, there's going to be a lot on the sidelines. And I don't know the level of apprehension it would take for someone not to do it because, you know, a lot of these coaches do unhealthy things all the time, right? Like, they sleep in their offices and eat fast food and whatever, things they know are bad for them, but they love football and they, you know, want to do it, right? But I do think, you know, you're going to have some of these coaches making those decisions in all sports. College basketball has a lot of coaches that are in that, you know, over the age of 62. So, It's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. But like I said, I mean, we already know these coaches, like, do unhealthy behaviors all the time. So maybe it would take, like, a doctor really kind of requiring it as much as they possibly could for that to happen. But, you know, that is part of the calculation here. When you hear the way that people talk about how sidelines are going to be set up and practices, like, that is part of the calculation. Like, how do you protect the coaching population?
All right, Nicole Auerbach, let me get you out of here on this. We'll try to end it on a little bit of a higher note. Have you heard any wacky ideas about how to combat this on the college football field? Are there any really bad or just really creative ideas that you've heard along the way?
No, but I have really liked, you know how we saw some of those photos, I believe they were from, like, Europe somewhere, where there was people who were, like, at a cafe but wearing noodles on their hats, like, noodles, and it was just, like, keeping people 6 feet apart. Like, I love ideas like that, or those, like, those inflatable bubble ball things.
The sumo suits. Yep.
Yeah, like, all that stuff. Even just if you did that, like, for one day of practice, just to, like, make everyone laugh, I would just get a kick out of it. You know who would be most likely to do this would be, like, Nick Rolovich. I should probably text him this idea. He's someone who would do it.
Her name is Nicole Auerbach, again, senior writer for The Athletic. Check out her podcast as well, Coach's Clubhouse from SiriusXM. Nicole, keep us posted if you hear anything new, and keep up all the great work. Your reporting's been great on this. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, guys. Stay safe.
All right, Dan. Nicole Auerbach, again, The Athletic. Very pleased to have her back on the show. Longtime friend of The Solid Verbal. How do you feel after hearing Nicole's insight?
I'm crossing fingers. I'm crossing toes. I'm crossing everything else, Ty. I feel like, rightfully so, a lot of administrators don't know what to do because this is nothing that you're trained for. You're trained to lean on as many experts and smart people around you as possible. But the fact is, there's no playbook for this football term. There's no playbook for how to navigate a global situation like this, keeping players safe, managing schedules, managing travel, using safety protocols that are brand new. It's not that I feel for them specifically because the actual victims here are the victims, but it's hard to get a sense of confidence that people know what they're doing because the smartest, most experienced, most knowledgeable people are learning on the fly. So it's hard to imagine that people trained in college administration and run fits and recruiting coordination are going to be able to figure out how to navigate this in the next month or so.
Ain't that the truth? No. Yeah. And I wanted to ask her, we ran out of time. What is the risk here? Like the realistic possibility that if they just blow up the season altogether, if they push it off till spring, if they decide in spring they can't have it. Again, I don't want this to happen. But if it comes to fruition, what is the actual likelihood of some of these programs going belly up? Because that's the other thing we've heard about with regard to testing, with regard to some of these smaller schools just not getting the paycheck from playing the big school, right? The Ohio States and the band not getting their $2 million paycheck from Tennessee. What happens? If that comes to fruition? I hope it doesn't. We'll have to wait and see what happens in due time. Again, by the time many folks listen to this, we'll have news from the Ivy League, and we could talk about that on the Friday show that drops Friday morning. It will be interesting times ahead, though. College football is fragmented. We don't have a commissioner. We have a lot of conferences. We can hope that they're talking. Nicole seemed to indicate they are. I've heard some other speculation that they're talking a lot, maybe not as much as they should. We'll find all this out in due time, certainly a lot more over the next few weeks. But we are keenly interested and aware in this news that is forthcoming and pretty important as it relates to having a season in the 2020 calendar year.
Can I ask you a question that is deeply subjective and has no right answer, and it's just your personal internal clock and gauge?
Please.
What is your confidence level that everything surrounding college football, not within college football? So I'm saying American society at large, and I know different states are in different places, but what is your confidence level right now, knowing what we've been through with different levels of success across the country? What is your confidence level that things will dramatically improve outside of college football to make college football seem more feasible, that the bigger picture is trending, in this case, steeply downward?
Right. Well, this gets back to your optics question, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough to put on a season when it feels like things are getting worse, right?
Right.
I don't have a high level of confidence, to be honest.
Okay.
I don't. And I try to be as optimistic as possible, but...
Yeah.
Things are just trending in a very bad direction. They've been for the last week and a half. I think it correlates directly with this wave of pessimism we've seen. Eventually, we'll come out of this. Eventually, we'll be all right. But yeah, sports unfortunately takes a back seat when it feels like there are much more important things to deal with. Hope I'm wrong.
It's hard to make the case. I am desperate to be wrong. It's hard to make the case that we as a people have earned college football. It's hard to make that case right now.
I would agree. I would agree. But we'll see. We'll see where things go. We'll expect the worst and hope for the best.
Yeah.
As another wise man once said, let us know your thoughts. SolidVerbal@gmail.com. So with that all being said, Dan, you recognize that bit of a bummer this show.
Yeah.
Right. The topics that we're talking about are heavy for college football fans, for sports fans, just for people to listen to. It's not fun.
Yeah.
So I think what we're going to try to do on Friday is spice it up a little bit. Given circumstances, we're going to do our best to at least have a more fun show. So we got a fun little show planned. I think it'll be a welcome break from all the heaviness that I think you find whenever you go out to read about college football news. And so if you're brought down a little bit by this one, come back on Friday morning. We're going to do our best to liven it up a bit.
If this was a problem episode, our next episode will be a solution one, right?
Is that a problem or no? That's something different.
It's not a problem.
I'm still
I think
not
you're
clear
coming
on
around
what that
to
is.
That. Okay. Fair enough.
We'll try to pick it up a little bit and end the week on a high note. Appreciate y'all downloading. Again, don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to leave a review. Don't forget to follow along out there on all the social channels. Been doing a lot on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram.
Yep.
Coming soon to a YouTube near you. You can find those links again on our website, solidverbal.com, where you can also subscribe to the newsletter.
If you haven't done that already. Can you make me a promise?
I can pinky swear, yes.
Will you do your stay solid that's about to happen as Yoda Bane?
Oh, boy. Stay... okay, I think I can try.
Okay, let's hear it. Leave that in.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrand.
Stay solid. Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.